Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
All righty. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have an amazing founder joining us. She is a powerhouse, you know, a really incredible company that she's building with really amazing goal. And we're going to be talking about how the idea was born, how she was able to raise the money, not having the domain expertise, and then also for a segment that was not known for raising, you know, tons of money. And then also how she went about, you know, really developing, you know, the company, building it up to having employees all over the world and all of the good stuff that we like to hear when it comes to building, financing, scaling, and all of that. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today. And her name is Daphna Nissenbaum. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me here today. Pleasure
being here. Originally born and raised around the Tel Aviv area. How was life growing up over there?
It's always interesting to grow up here. Always something is going on, but it's a very good place to be raised at, a very free childhood. Yeah, I was lucky to be born and raised here.
And in your case, I mean, you got into computer science quite early. What caught your attention about computers?
So I was very good in mathematics, and my parents were told, so if she's good at mathematics, maybe she'll be good at computer science, or she will be good at computer science as well. So actually, I started my computer science career at high school. So I went I studied the computer science back then, and then continued it over to my first degree, the BA degree, and et cetera, and worked in this field with I think it was in the first part of my career, but several years.
And even, you know, going into university, you also did computer science, you did economics, then you mixed it up with marketing and with entrepreneurship. So obviously, you know, it sounds like computers, you were really hooked into it at an early stage. So why combining it with those other, you know, areas?
I was always very interested in business. So how to do business, how to grow business, how to create business from scratch, different aspects like marketing, economics, all that. So I was interesting to me, and I was really thrilled to study it. Study is not enough. We have to practice. And that's what I do today. I practice business from all different aspects.
Was there like anyone in your family that or someone close to you that had built a business that got you thinking like, wow, you know, maybe I'd like to look into doing that one day myself?
Yeah. So first of all, my father has his own business, but it's a local business. But more importantly, I think that's my husband who built two successful companies, and then was in the venture capital business. So yeah, I had inspirational stories around me.
That's amazing. So for you, you eventually went to the army, and there in Israel, both men and women, you know, go to the army, and you went at the age of 18. How was the experience of going through that for you? And then also, what did you learn around discipline?
To go to the army, it's part of our life here. There's no question. You get to the age of 18, you go to the army, you join the army. I was kind of aiming to go to the computer science space and develop software for the army. That's what I did. There was a special program, prestige one. I was planning to go, and eventually went to that. It's a long program, and then I was designated to work with the Navy to develop specific systems for the Navy. I learned a lot in this period, a lot. First, the technological side, which is obvious, but also how to work in a very big and disciplined system, how to lead, how to build something from nothing, that's how to think and create ideas out of the box. That's part of the education that they go through. So it was very inspirational, educational, and spiritual experience for me, which I took a lot to my then coming business career.
Why did you eventually, after you got your MBA and all of that, and you enter the workforce, why leaving the world of computers and going into research?
When I left the Army, I worked several years in the computer science industry, different jobs, different positions, different countries even. But then I decided that I want to change my career. And that was my first change. I wanted to do something else. Actually, it was post my MBA. So kind of, I can say that my mind opened to new things, and I wanted to experience something else, not just the same area that I was in at that time. So my first career change was going to the financial markets, more financial markets. And I actually was the CEO of a research center on capital markets, risk management in capital markets. So that was my first career change. I was there for several years, really enjoyed it, learned a lot. Again, took several tools to my next career step. And when I decided that I want to change again, then I went to build my own business, and that was Tipa.
That's amazing. So how did the whole idea and the incubation of it, because as they say, ideas, they are like dormant. You know, we don't even know that they are there.
Right.
They incubate over the course of time. And then there's like certain points, you know, in time that help to shape further that idea. And then a moment in time where it's like the tip, you know, it's just like, you're like, okay, let's go. So walk us through all of that, you know, how did incubate, how it progressed, and that moment where you were like, screw it, let's do it.
Okay. So for years, I wanted to have my own business. It just wasn't just one point in time. For years, I wanted to build my own business, and I was thinking, what would be the best idea? You know, I'm coming from software area, so it was kind of immediate. I couldn't think about that, but I wanted to do something else, not in this space. And I read several researchers on how new great ideas were born, where to look for new ideas, etc., etc. And eventually, I understood that the biggest ideas are just around us. We just have to open our eyes, and think about what would be. What would change our lives? And I started to think this way. Just look around me, just open the eyes, open my mind. And one day I had kind of a discussion with my children around the plastic bottles they used to take to school. And then heard about the recycling problem. And then heard about the plastic challenge, etc., etc. And I went out jogging. I jog every morning, so I went out jogging, and I thought to myself, what would be, so this plastic problem exists, and we don't see any course of changing anything in this industry. It just grows and grows and grows dramatically. And it all goes to the sea, and the damage that it actually brings to the world is enormous. And I thought, okay, what would be the most intuitive way that we can use packaging, or to use packaging? And I said to myself, okay, so the first thing that came to my mind was an apple. Because when I ate an apple and I thought the residuals to the waste bin just disintegrates, biodegrades by itself and turns into compost, into soil, right? And I said, okay, so nature also packed. Nature packed the bananas, nature packed the oranges, nature packed the nuts, et cetera, et cetera. And all that food is packed with a compostable packaging. So why won't we do the same? And that was the inspiration. And then the idea was to develop a package that is, on one hand, will bring all the properties of conventional plastic, but at the same time will be fully compostable, which means that we can treat the package exactly as we treat, for example, the banana peel or any other organic material. So if we put the package or the organic or the orange peel in a compost bin, it disintegrates and biodegrades and turns into soil, into compost, within up to 6 months. So as opposed to having conventional plastic package that lasts forever, and forever can be 400, 500 years, it doesn't really matter. That's forever for us. If we can have a package that once post-consumption can go into the organic waste bin and turn into an organic material within a very short period of time, why won't we do that? And that's simulating nature. So that's how the idea was born.
And then what happened next?
And then, okay, so that's the idea. Now, I'm not a plastic engineer. I'm not a chemist. I have no background on materials background. So I started to investigate. I met my partner then at the King of London, by the way, but we joined together and started to look for the scientists that can help us bring such a solution to the world, and started to working in the path of developing a solution. Two things I understood, in this journey, in the beginning of the journey. First of all, it's not going to be easy. Otherwise, someone else probably would have done it before, but it's not going to be easy. It's a journey. It's going to be a long one. It's inventing new materials and inventing new packaging, and packaging has a very important role with our food. So it needs to protect the food, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot to invent there. And the second thing, I mean, the idea started with, I discussed with my kids the plastic bottles, and I thought we would like to replace the bottles, but no, the main problem is not the bottles. The main problem is all the other packages that we use for foods. And I also understood that actually recycling hardly works. The percentage are kind of very, very worrying. And within all this huge industry of food and packed food, there are segments. And we decided to focus on flexible packaging. So flexible packaging, as opposed to bottles or jars, flexible packaging are all those soft packages that we use a lot. For example, for granola bars, for snacks, for fresh produce, for bread, et cetera, et cetera. All those soft packages. Actually, very thin packages that are very similar to nature creation. I mean, it's the same in the same space. And those packages usually blend few materials together. And once there are few polymers blend in the same package, then there's no way to recycle it. It's like you blend few colors together, and then you want to separate them. There's no way to do that. So bottles are made from one polymer, usually PET, so it's easy to recycle, easier to recycle. But flexible packaging, impossible. So we focused on flexible packaging, and that's how we started the long journey.
So what's the business model of TIPA? How do you guys make money?
It's a very, very good, very good question, and I'm saying it because we were considering several ways, but eventually we invent the new materials, right? This is our innovation, protected with very strong IP globally, et cetera. Our intellectual property. The second thing that we developed is knowledge on how to process our materials throughout all the supply chain of conventional plastic. So we can manufacture our products, our packages, on conventional plastic machinery. So that was very important for us from day one, to make sure that we can work on the same machinery. And now when we can work on the same machinery, there's no need for us to build new facilities or buy new machines. So we collaborate with companies who already manufacture those type of packages. So we are fabless. We sell our films. We manufacture our films at three, four, five facilities globally. That's it. And we sell the films to companies who manufacture packaging. So that's in a nutshell our business model.
Hey, guys. So pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. There's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard. And already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
And also, I mean, it's really remarkable the amount of capital that you guys have been able to raise. Also, given the fact that this was not like your domain expertise. I mean, you jump right into this, given your background. But then also, it was a segment that was not attracting a lot of money also. So how has it been the journey of going through the motions of raising? I believe you guys have raised, you know, close to $140 million, which is a lot of money. So how has it been the experience too of raising the money for you guys?
First of all, I think to everyone, except maybe very unique companies, it's not easy to raise money. It's a challenge. It's the CEO challenge. And I've been, you know, all my life in TIPA working on raising money. At the beginning, it was very hard because since I'm not a scientist, I'm not coming from the software, from the materials, the science industry. So the first money is raised from friends and family who actually knew me and knew our capabilities and believed in us. And so that was the very early stage money. And then we looked for investors globally. We couldn't raise money, you know, from funds who were investing money more in the space of apps, of other technologies that are not our technology. It was very challenging. So we eventually found our first investors were both Israeli Canadian fund led round A. In round B, we had more family offices that joined us, who really believed in us. And actually those investors were looking for something else to invest in, not just the regular familiar startups that are in the same very well-known spaces. So families who looked for sustainability, there were families who looked specifically to solve the plastic challenge. So it was challenging. I can say that the last round, when the company started to grow and we already had teams in Australia, in Europe, in North America, and we started to demonstrate growth, it was a bit easier one, still a challenging one, but a bit easier one. The investment environment was very good at that time as well. So we managed to have on board very significant investors. We are very proud of course. So it's unique investors. But I'm glad we are here today, right? This is our oxygen. So the money is our oxygen, like every other company.
What has been, I guess, your biggest lesson when it comes to fundraising?
First of all, is to accept the word no. That was very hard for me at the beginning, to understand that people don't necessarily see what I see. And people are looking more to have a return faster than doing the right thing to the world. Anyway, it's their right. You know, 100% the right to do that, but it was hard for me. Today I can say, I think I can say better, who is the person who is going to invest in such companies, who is not. I can sense the eagerness or the level of interest in products like ours or similar to ours. I can say that there's no meeting that I didn't take. I took all the meetings. There were rounds that I even met more than 100 investors until I found the one that said yes. And I can also say that if there's one that says yes, then the others follow. So we had a very interesting story in one of our rounds. I think it was the last one. Yeah, it was the previous one. We had an investor who wanted to invest in us, and they started the due diligence, and we ran through an awful, awful process. They kind of pushed us to the corner. And we got to the point that and they said, well, oh, we're progressing. And then like 2 months before the money ended, they came with demands that we couldn't meet. I said, no, thank you. I'm not working with an investor that is not going to do good for the company. And we had no money. It was about, I didn't know what I'm doing, what I'm going to do. But gladly, I got support for another few months from our current investors. And then we started the round again. And all of a sudden, there were like 3, 4, 5 investors that came and said, yes, we're going to join. And we closed a significant, wonderful round. I had to have courage to do that, to say no to money when you have no money in the bank. But gladly, it turned out to be the right decision. And we closed a good round that led us to the next round, which was significant to the company as well.
That's amazing. Amazing. So obviously, with money, you know, with also employees, I mean, you guys have employees globally, you know, distributed. I think that there is definitely a bet on the vision, right? And when we're thinking about the vision, you know, if you were to go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world, Daphna, where the vision of TIPA is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Wow. That's my dream. It's a better world to our children. It's a world that actually moves into more organic materials, which is much more what nature asks us to do. It's a world that we have no huge amount of plastic left behind us. Hopefully, nature can recover and be in a better place. Just imagine that all the plastic that we use turns into sand, into soil. And there's no footprint, bad footprint behind us. I mean, it's not going to be, you know, 100% all around the place, but we can definitely leave a better heritage, a better world behind us.
I love that. I love the sound of that. So nothing like a better world, no, and making a difference like you guys are doing. So obviously it's been about 12 years, you know, in change that you guys have been really pushing this initiative of TIPA. You know, one thing that I guess, you know, going towards that vision too is, I guess the consciousness and mindset around climate change and all the issues, you know, in the last years, especially when you guys got started with this, I don't think the consciousness was as present as it is today, no? And nothing like being at the right time in history when you're building a business. How do you think timing and being able to have the wind blowing behind your back has helped you guys with building the company?
When we started, you're very right. There wasn't any awareness. I mean, people even ask me, what's the problem with plastic? Why are you seeking to do something else? So, and then the awareness increased. I think it was around 2017. When countries like China, like the UK, started to work against plastic, conventional plastic. But then, unfortunately, during COVID and the war, things changed back. We all know that. Sustainability did not remain the main thing that people are looking at. Although we have to, we must. So I think that the best time for us is still in front of us. It's still to come. I think that what we see today, actually, is the companies, not just countries. Countries said plastic is bad because they know the statistics, they know the numbers, they know the pollution. But companies didn't have any, and they look at the bottom line, so they didn't want to take step into changing their packaging. But what we see today is that even the big companies are starting to get ready for that day and working on alternatives to plastic. We see more and more. Again, it's not the governments. It's more the people. It's more the brands, the supermarkets, the retailers, that are working towards changing the plastic, the amount of plastic that they use. I think that the right time is in front of us because there was a statement that was said by, I think, the majority of the companies on the board that by 2025, all the packages will be either recyclable or compostable. Or reusable, and then they changed it because they couldn't reach that. They continue to work on recycling, and obviously it doesn't work. So now they understand they need to do something differently. So the line was pushed over to 2030, And now we see companies getting ready for that. And I think that we will see the increase in the demand coming in the next 1 to 2 years.
So obviously, as I was saying, you guys have been at it for 12 years, and there's a lot that happens during this time, and a lot of lessons learned, a lot of successes, a lot of failures. And I think that failing is part of succeeding. So it's very important. And in this case, what I like to do is I like to put you into a time machine, and I like to bring you back in time. I like to bring you to that moment, you know, where perhaps it was around 2009, where you were starting to think about like building something of your own and becoming a founder. And let's say I gave you the opportunity of showing up and being right there with your younger self, with that younger Daphna, and being able to give that younger Daphna one piece of advice before launching a business, given what you know now. What would that be?
First of all, I would say I would do the same as I did. Do it. It's not going to be easy. You just need to know that it's not going to be easy. You need to know that it's going to be long. You need to have the patience, which I did. But I think that sustainability or changing the fundamentals of the way we live, this is our future. That's what I think. More than adding more applications or whatever, more cyber, this is important as well. But we need to invest ourselves, our lives, our minds in changing things in the way we live. So I guess I would have done the same. Maybe I would say, you know, I'm trying to think if don't do this, do that. But then I wouldn't learn the things that I needed to learn. So it's kind of hard for me to say. Maybe act faster, do things faster. Maybe if you have your gut feeling, don't be afraid. Do it immediately. Don't wait for other people to tell you if it's right or wrong. I would say, and that's maybe the one conclusion that I would say, if you believe in yourself, and that's the first thing that you need to believe. You have to believe in yourself and in your vision, and stick to the vision, and don't change it according to what other people say. That's one thing. And if you believe in your vision and believe in yourself, believe in your gut feeling, and just do what your mind or your heart or your feelings tell you to do. You know, maybe too many times in my this part of my career, I listened to advisors that I shouldn't listen to. I didn't. Eventually, I took my decisions, and when I needed to take my decision, I asked myself, okay. Leave the company, leave the people aside, leave the advisors aside, leave Daphna aside. What is right for the company? What is right for the vision? Because that's what we have to stick. What we have to stick with. If it's me, if it's someone else, this is what we need to do. And eventually, that's the way I took my decisions. Like I said, you know, in the investment story that I just told you, I was promised to get, I don't know, this certain amount of money if I get them in the company. I said no. This is not right for the company. So that's if I can go back, I would say to myself, you know what to do, just do it and don't afraid or don't be too suspicious about your gut feelings.
I love it. So Daphna, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
I'm in LinkedIn, of course. Our website is tipa-corp.com, T-I-P-A, as heard. And I'll be happy to contact anyone.
Amazing. Well, hey, Daphna, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here, as I said.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.